The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, coming to you from the great state of Texas, and where it is nice and sunny and primarily maskless. Welcome back. Great to be back in the chair. I want to thank Hugh Hewitt for giving me the opportunity to be here. We've got tons to talk about. We have to start, though, with COVID-19 and remasking. This idea that we're going to reimpose masks, not on the unvaccinated, where it might help, but on everybody, including the vaccinated, who really aren't presenting a risk and who aren't at risk. And even the data that the CDC is now pointing to is demonstrating just how well these vaccines work. I mean, this is the message that the CDC has to be emphasizing. The vaccines work. The vaccines are actually the path out of this pandemic. Masks are not the path out of this pandemic. If masks were the path out of this pandemic, we would have been out of this pandemic last May. And not May 2021, but May 2020. Masks are a good way to mitigate risk for the people who are actually at risk. The vaccines clearly remove that risk. If you look at the CDC's data on breakthrough infections, breakthrough hospitalizations, they're not really tracking breakthrough infections, mostly because the breakthrough infections that happen are asymptomatic. Almost all asymptomatic are so mild that most people don't realize that that's what they have. Hospitalizations account for 0.7% of all Americans who have been vaccinated. That's a 99.3% of Americans who've been vaccinated have not been hospitalized with COVID. Deaths are a quarter of that, maybe a fifth of that. So you're now into the hundredths of a percentage point of when it comes to vaccinated people actually dying from COVID, and who are and even those numbers, the CDC will tell you, are somewhat inflated, because those are people who have been had at the time of death had COVID in their system, but may not necessarily have died from it. So the vaccines are tremendously effective here. And that really should be the only message that the CDC has. The way out of this is to get vaccinated. If you're vaccinated, you've got nothing more to worry about. I mean, life is risk, first off. So people die every year of the flu. Even if they've been vaccinated against it, people die every year of the flu. This is the same thing. Nothing is 100% guaranteed, but this is about a 99.3% guarantee, 99.93% guarantee. This is a tremendously effective vaccine, maybe one of the combination of the three vaccines we already approved here in the United States, perhaps the most effective regime of vaccines that we've ever seen. This is an amazing achievement. And the CDC is apparently intent on undermining this by telling everybody to put masks back on. We've got a lot of different cuts today. Let's start with Francis Collins, who was on Fox News Sunday yesterday with Dana Perino, talking about why we need to start over almost from scratch on the Delta variant.
I will very much like to do that. And let me try to strip away all of the confusing information and try to hit the high points. And they kind of come in two categories, the bad news and the good news. So let me start with the bad news. Delta is spreading. We know it's extremely contagious. And certainly in some parts of the country, like Missouri, Arkansas, Louisiana, it is reaching very high levels. And we are now once again seeing case levels per day closing in on 100,000, which we haven't seen since February. So this is really a different virus than last year. And everything we learned about COVID a year ago, you got to sort of hit the reset button on now how we need to react to it. We also are learning, and this is not particularly good news, that vaccinated people, if they get infected, which is rare, but it does happen, they have pretty high viral loads, which means they could also be passing it on to other people. Even though they have a very low risk of getting seriously ill themselves, they can be a vector. That was the reason for CDC saying it's time in those places where the virus is spreading, which is about 75% of our counties, to put the masks back on when you're in indoor space, whether you're vaccinated or not. This is the best way to stop the transmission of this very contagious virus. I will very much like to do that. And let me try to.
All right. First off, this is not a different virus.
It's not a different virus.
Dwayne Generalissimo Patterson, is this a different virus or is this a variant of the same virus?
It is not a different virus because the vaccine still works on it.
The vaccine still works against this. And this is what people have to understand. The vaccine still works on this. We just got done going over the data. The CDC has been tracking breakthrough infections since the vaccines started. So we have now 7 months worth of data. We've got almost two full months now where Delta has been the dominant variant inside the United States. And you still have 99.3% of vaccinated people have not been hospitalized with this. 99.93% of vaccinated people have not died from this. And again, these are people who have been out in the world. They have taken off the masks. They have gone out. They have gone to the grocery store. They've gone to the movies. They've gone to do different things. And they haven't been masking up. And this vaccine has been an amazing amount of protection for them. Now, are there some people who might be at higher risk? Of course, some people who have immune suppression might be a little higher risk of getting a breakthrough infection, and those people are a little bit higher risk of getting complications for this. So if you're around an immune suppressed person, maybe you might want to take a little bit of care, even if you've been vaccinated. That makes some sense. But the idea that you're going to have to wear a mask now for until everybody gets vaccinated, which
Is lunacy,
and B is not going to happen. There are some people who just flat out are going to refuse to be vaccinated. The problem with that is you can't build public policy around people like that. If you choose not to be vaccinated, that's your choice. I am very much opposed to mandates that have a government requirement for a vaccination. Employer mandates are something a little bit different. We're going to talk about that later in the show. But the federal government can't say, if you're in the United States, you have to be vaccinated. That's something that we should oppose, and I do oppose. But if you choose not to be vaccinated, you're the person who is accepting that risk. And you can't expect everybody else to change, to carry the burden of that risk because you've chosen to do that. And that's really what this comes down to. Who gets the burden of this risk? Is it the person who takes the risk, or is it everybody else around that person to protect that person from the risk that they're choosing? It can't be the latter, because if that is the philosophy, then you will never see an end to mask mandates, and it won't just be COVID. I mean, people die every year of the flu. I think those numbers are somewhat inflated, but it is a fact that people die every year from the flu. And if we are now going to go to the zero COVID baseline when we're coming up with public policy, Dwayne, what's to say we're going to stop going to, you know, zero flu, zero whatever, even if it's an extraordinarily small number of people who are dying from these things? Why shouldn't we just have everybody mask up all the time for everything
in
perpetuity?
If the vaccine were still in short supply and we were still prioritizing who gets it based off of more pressing need, then the equation's different. As soon as April 19th happened and the vaccine was available everywhere for free on demand, once that happened, my moral responsibility for your safety and protection against COVID ends at the inside of your front door.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, this gets back to who takes on the burden of risk. It should be the person who takes the risk. And again, when you have a short supply of vaccines, then everybody has to kind of pitch in and do their best to get past the supply shortage. We don't have a supply shortage. We have a glut. We have vaccines that are actually expiring on the shelf because the uptake is too slow. And we need to encourage more people to get those vaccines.
You could go to a CVS or a drugstore and get the vaccine in the time it takes to go through this commercial break.
Indeed. And the commercial break is coming up in just a moment. But I mean, this is extremely frustrating. We're talking about this for most of the hour today, because I find this sort of authoritarian impulse to be a very concerning development. And we've been warning about this for well over a year.
That, and it's going to make people angry. It's making people mad.
It's more than it's making people mad. It's making people tune out the people who actually might have a warning to give us. This is the boy who cried wolf. Nobody in this equation has the credibility to stand up now and say, oh, wait, now there's something really different when it does occur, because they've been telling this nonsense. That, oh, this is a completely different virus. It's not a completely different virus. It's a dangerous variant for the people who are unvaccinated. So get vaccinated. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Hugh. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Hugh today. And on the phone with us is one of my good friends, Selena Zito, New York Post and Washington Examiner columnist. You can find out more about her at selenazito.com. She's calling us from the road. You're in Sioux Falls, Selena. That's what I understand.
That is true. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
And this is not some place that you're camping out at. I mean, you've been in 9 states over the past week. Do I have that right?
I've lost count. Let's say more than a handful. Yes.
More than a handful. My goodness. I mean, Selena Zito is one of the hardest working people in politics and in journalism. She is out on the road constantly talking to people about where they're at and giving us a very clear picture of what it's like outside of the media bubble. And by the way, she's got a great column up at the Washington Examiner. Just went up yesterday about why Ohio went red. Became a solidly red state. Next thing you know, I'm going to be doing the Ohio State Buckeye cheer or something like that, Selena. I don't know. But I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you about masks, because we've been talking about masks all hour long here, and the frustration that I have as somebody who's very enthusiastically vaccinated, being told, "Oh, you have to put a mask on," not because you're really at risk, but because people who aren't vaccinated and who won't get vaccinated need your protection. I'm kind of done with that, Selena. What are you finding out when you're going through all these different states? What is the state of masking in the non-bubble states?
Well, the state of masking, even in my home state of Pennsylvania, is pretty non-existent. You know, I live outside of Pittsburgh, and in the county that I live in, I didn't see anybody with a mask on. Now, when I went into the city of Pittsburgh, you would see it. But as I have driven across the country and stopped in different states, hundreds of counties, you know, the mask situation is essentially non-existent. And I there's a couple of things as you listen to people talk that really sort of sheds a light as to how people feel about this. And that is, first of all, most people had a level of expectation that 100% of the people in this country were not going to ever get the vaccination.
Right.
We never get 100% of anything. And so that sort of outrage and anger at people who didn't get it isn't as prevalent as you would see on social media, right?
Right.
And then this idea that there should be some sort of mandate, even though everyone's like saying, oh, don't say the M word. Right? They're still talking about the mandate, even though they're, you know, I say the F word. That doesn't fly with people at all. And then this masking up is just people are looking at social media, they're looking at D.C. and New York and these larger cities, and they're like, yeah, whatever, we're not doing that. Y'all just can keep on doing that, but we're not doing that. You know, for the most part, people have been responsible.
Right.
And also, I think this is really prevalent among people, is that you can't completely eradicate a virus. It's going to continue to happen, and we have to be able at some point to understand that there's going to be risk and lead our lives.
Right, exactly. And like, I'll tell you the view from Central Texas. I do see people masking up occasionally out here, and I just assume that those are people who assess their risk at being a little higher. And I say that's great. If you want to wear a mask, I don't think anybody should be shamed for wearing a mask. If business owners want to require a mask and I want to go inside the business, I am a big believer in private property rights, and so I will make up my mind then. I have some masks in the car if that's the case. And I really want to do that, I will put one on. But look, I mean, I think you're spot on about what's going on down here in Central Texas, too, which is that people are not going to be told you have to mask up wherever you go, regardless of your status. People are tired of this, Selena, and they're exhausted by these constantly shifting messages from people who should know better. You got about 30 seconds. I'll let you have the last word.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is the inconsistency. Now, I know you cannot predict what a virus can do. However, the forthrightness of people in charge, right, whether it's government or science, and then constantly changing that and then shaming you for not keeping up with the change, that inconsistency, people have lost respect for the inconsistency, and I think that's a problem for Democrats going forward.
It's a huge problem. It's a huge problem, Selena. Thank you for being with us. We'll be right back. Stay tuned, folks. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Hugh this week from the great state of Texas. Deep in the heart of Texas, and joining me to open this hour is one of the nicest guys in politics. I call him the Prince of Twitter because that's exactly who he is. Red State contributor Andrew Malcolm at AH Malcolm on Twitter, the Prince of Twitter. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you, Ed. It's wonderful to be here, and welcome to Texas, eh?
Yeah, thank you very much, and welcome to Tennessee for you. We're both recent. We both recently fled our long held digs to decamp for warmer and or saner pastures, I think, Andrew.
Yeah, anything to keep my supply of bacon going.
Now, this is a crazy story, right? California is going to face a bacon shortage because they passed a law that requires all pork to be raised in with certain space parameters that fits almost none of the pork producers in the United States. And so any pork producer that doesn't fit this category can't sell their wares in California. Now, forget the Interstate Commerce Clause, because this is a law that really should have been overturned by the Ninth Circuit. I imagine it's going to go to the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court's going to tell California that they can't pass those kind of laws that impact producers in other states. But I mean, there's going to be a bacon shortage in California. If you like bacon and eggs, or bacon and, well, almost anything else, I like bacon on everything. I like bacon on bacon. Californians, you're going to have a problem. You're going to start seeing either shortages or huge price increases, or both, on everybody's favorite meat. This is crazy, Andrew.
It is crazy. And I'm going to become a very rich bacon runner.
I think I found my next. You can run it from Tennessee. I'll run it from Texas. We are coming to your rescue, Californians. Andrew and I are coming to your rescue.
Well, the thing is, you know, they will focus on getting more pork into a legislation, maybe.
Right. Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is these are the types of things when we say legislate in haste, repent at leisure. This is what we're kind of talking about. This was a very popular measure when it was adopted in California. It was, you know, animal rights groups were behind this, and environmental groups were behind this. And I suspect it's going to become a whole lot less popular once it's in force and the price of bacon doubles or triples in California.
Well, California is going to become a very safe place, so it won't have pork, and it already doesn't have plastic shampoo bottles from the little ones from the hotels.
Oh, I hadn't heard about that. Or maybe I did hear about that and I'd just forgotten about it. But yeah.
And the other thing is, which is insane and real, last year, the legislature passed and Newsom signed legislation that makes it perfectly legal for any citizen in California to deny a request for help from a police officer. So you can refuse to help a policeman who's asking for help. You just don't know what they're thinking.
Well, I actually do know what they're thinking. This is part of the whole defund and demoralize the police movement that Democrats have really, for some reason, embraced, and which is really going, it's already backfired on them in last year's election. I mean, House Democrats were saying all this talk about defund the police and socialism really impacted their candidates in the House, and it's going to do it again next year, especially when some of these measures begin to bite. I mean, you take a look at the crime in Minneapolis, you know, which I'm not there any longer, but I mean, the crime there is still going through the roof, and that's true in many of the urban centers where you had this effort to reduce police funding, reduce the police presence. Crime has just exploded in a way that it hasn't. I mean, a single year spike that frankly, I don't think we've ever seen a single year spike like this. And
I think the murders are up like 29% in the first quarter.
That's nationwide. It's up higher than that in Minneapolis. I know it's higher than that in Minneapolis, and it was up 58% year on year. 2020, they had a 58% increase in homicides in Minneapolis.
Well, I have a column up at Red State today that talks about a number of things that just feel wrong about the Biden administration. You know, I mean,
yes.
I likened it to moving to Tennessee, and the sense of drift that you have when you move. Nothing is in the right place. You're maybe more easily annoyed. And it's an anxious moment till you get the House settled and organized, and I think a lot of people feel that way about the country now. You know, you have a president who's talking gibberish sometimes, and this guy has access to the nuclear launch code, so it gives you pause.
Well, I think it does, and Andrew, it's more than just Joe Biden, though, too. I mean, it's the CDC, the NIH, that keep reversing themselves. They you know, every 3 or 4 weeks, they change the message, and they keep coming back to sort of this fear factor, right? I mean, this whole thing with the Delta variant and being, you know, the war has changed sort of situation. It's a different virus when it's not. You know, where they're telling vaccinated people you're at risk when the data clearly shows that they're not. I think that's contributing to the unease, and having these mandates come and go, come and go, come and go. That is something that I think really sets people on edge, and it's building up. It's going to build up to a huge amount of dissatisfaction that is going to end up backfiring on Democrats next year if it continues.
Yeah, it does. You know, Americans don't like to be told what to do. If you can convince them, they'll go along and do it. And we've seen that in many of national emergencies over the years. But when you tell them you have to do this, I mean, the British learned that lesson back in Boston Harbor with the Tea Party. You know, I mean,
right.
it's a strain in the American personality. That we just don't like to be told what to do. And there's been a very poor job of selling You know, if they had started out saying, look, this is so new, we don't really know. We're going to try to find protection for everyone, but please bear with us. But no, they said, okay, 2 weeks, and then we'll flatten the curve. And 2 weeks became 2 months, and now it's into the second year. People go, wait a minute, this just doesn't ring true, and I'm not going to do it.
Well, I think it would, if there wasn't a vaccine, right, then you could say, well, look, I mean, things come and go, and you have to react to these things, and we don't have a way other than some of these mitigation measures that we're talking about. But that's not true. We've got vaccines. The vaccines are enormously effective. And rather than emphasize that and say, if you've been vaccinated, you're back to normal. Everybody else, you should be wearing masks or staying home. That might actually incentivize people to go out and get themselves vaccinated. Instead, they're undercutting the message of the vaccines by claiming that everybody who's been vaccinated has to be fearful again of being out in public. And it's just the data simply doesn't support that. And I mean, it really is counterproductive, not just to American health as a whole, but even to their own political health. You can't sustain something like this.
No, you can't. And there's a lot of self-confidence, I just feel like, seeping away in the country. If you look at foreign media, they're scratching their heads and go, what is going on over there?
Well, I often scratch my head, too. It's one of the reasons why I'm bald. I scratch my head an awful lot, Andrew, what goes on over here. All right, so just give us I'll give you 15 seconds to wrap up your column. It's a great column at redstate.com.
Well, I do a Sunday column every week, especially for VIP members. And then I post during the week too on generally political subjects, but things that intrigue me, like getting back to summer travel. I did a piece on Tim Tebow trying to get back in the NFL. It's a fun fight, and I worked with you a lot at Hot Air, and it's great to be over with this Red State team at redstate.com.
It's great to have you as a town hall colleague too. Andrew Malcolm, the Prince of Twitter at AH Malcolm. I'm Ed Morrissey of hotair.com, filling in for Hugh. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Hugh from deep in the heart of Texas. I am the most recent Texas radio host that there is, and joining me right now, who represents the heart of Texas, Representative Chip Roy, Republican from Texas. Representative Roy, welcome to the show.
Ed, great to be on, and great to be visiting with you from the great state of Texas.
Well, and I am very happy to be here. I believe your newest constituent, so there you go. And so this is great. I guess when you move to Texas, they automatically get you on a phone call with your congressman. Is that the way it works here in Texas? Because if so, it's awesome.
I've been told that we have the best customer service, constituent service of anyone, and we just wanted to get this rocking and rolling right out of the gate.
There you go, Congressman Roy. Thank you so much for being with us. We've been talking about mask mandates for practically this entire show, because the idea that we're going to start imposing mask mandates on the vaccinated is just ridiculous, and it's counterproductive to getting people on the right path to the end of this pandemic, which is universal voluntary vaccination so that we can put an end to this thing. They are talking about, in fact, they are imposing a mask mandate in the House of Representatives. You had a fiery speech about this. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there and what your objections are.
Well, look, I mean, let me first start to be very crystal clear that I'm pro-vaccine. My dad had polio. He's lived with the ravages of polio his whole life. And I'm very glad that my children, that myself, other Americans have been able to avail themselves of a polio vaccine. And we're so blessed that we've had 190 million Americans get vaccinated for COVID. Think about that, 190 million in 7 months. We've had an extraordinary rollout thanks to the efforts by President Trump, which were opposed by Democrats. Remember that.
Right.
Opposed by Democrats to even have the vaccine. Now we have 190 million Americans who have been vaccinated. When you include the people who have already had the virus, we're at something like 80% of all people over 18 years old have some form of immunity. Let's keep working on that. Let's keep making sure that American people are free. But now they want to force people to either be vaccinated by force or they want to force people to wear masks. And on the floor of the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi wants to make everybody wear masks again, despite the fact there's no data to back it up. They're hypocrites. The D.C. mayor is hosting weddings and parties without masks. And when she reinstated the mask mandate in D.C., the mayor only had 27 people in the hospital. When she lifted the mask mandate a couple of months ago, there were 90 people in the hospital.
Right.
This is all for show. It's politics. And by doing it, you're weakening freedom. But importantly, you're causing people to say, well, wait, what in the hell is the purpose of getting the vaccine? You guys are insane. You don't know what you're talking about. And I think it's harming America.
Well, this is part of the issue here is the credibility of these institutions that we need to rely on to get the message out about vaccinations. These people are flip-flopping back and forth on what vaccination means. They're screaming, well, follow the science, but what they're doing is social engineering that is completely divorced from the data. You talked about the mayor of Washington, D.C., where you had 27 people in the hospitals reimposing a mask mandate. We're talking about the director of the NIH going on television and saying, well, you know, just to be prudent, everybody should mask up. The people who are not getting vaccinated are assuming a risk themselves. That doesn't require the rest of us to take on the burden of that risk. I mean, really, shouldn't that be the message here, is that if you choose risk, that's your choice, but the rest of us shouldn't have to reorder our lives to help you deal with that risk.
No, I think that's exactly right. And what we've got here is, I think, political power at full display. And this is the time now for American people to say no. I'm very proud. There were 9 young women that I just tweeted out a story about these young women in a courthouse in New York, I believe. I don't have the facts in front of me. Who they're young and they have concerns about the vaccine. They have some concerns about, you know, because they're in childbearing years and stuff now. I think that's worthy of debate. I think that's up to them. I don't want to spread any information about giving people concerns about the vaccine. What I want is people to be free. These 9 young women told their boss no. And guess what? That boss is no longer requiring them to get the vaccine. That's good. That's America saying, hold on, no. Now, what I want them to do is have a conversation. I want them to be able to go down, talk to doctors, figure out what's right for them, make their own decisions, weigh the risks for them. That's what we do in a free country. And I'm sick and daggum tired of having Nancy Pelosi and Dr. Fauci and a bunch of tyrants tell me what I'm going to do. She was threatening to arrest my staff last week if my staff dare to walk in the complex without a mask. If she wants to do that, she comes through me. I've had enough. We need to start saying no. We need to stop allowing them to drive this country into a ditch while people come across our southern border fully exposed and carrying COVID, endangering our Border Patrol agents, Catholic Charities shoving hundreds of them into a hotel in La Jolla, Texas, fully positive with COVID. We know what's going on. This is all a shell game. It's all political power play, and they need to stop it.
We're speaking with Representative Chip Roy from Texas, and I know we've only got you for a couple of more minutes because you're a very busy man. You've got other things going on here, but I did want to ask you about immigration, especially in terms of the COVID-19 mitigation issues that we're talking about. You know, at the same time, and you brought this up, so it's a great segue. At the same time we're talking about forcing people to mask up, we're bringing people across the border and releasing them into the interior while they're infected with COVID. I mean, this is, talk about counterproductive and talk about hypocritical, but this is sort of an extension of the administration's policy on immigration in total anyway.
No, this is exactly right. And, you know, I just saw yesterday, late yesterday, my friend Henry Cuellar, a Democrat who represents the Rio Grande Valley or part of it, and he tweeted out some pictures, actually some similar pictures that I've gotten for sources down at the border, showing unbelievable numbers. I mean, you got to look down at the crazy numbers that we're now seeing. We're going to be spiking in July with numbers we've never seen before, blowing way past 1 million for this calendar year since Biden has been president in terms of apprehension. The amount of fentanyl, we're now at 8,500 pounds, at 8,500 pounds of fentanyl that have come in this fiscal year. which is enough to kill all Americans multiple times over. We have sex trafficking, human trafficking, cartels running our border. We have human beings at risk, endangering our country, endangering our Border Patrol agents, and it has to stop. And I'm glad Governor Abbott is pushing back. I think we're going to have to go further, and we have to go further quicker. We can't wait until the elections of next year. We're going to have to take operational control of our border back. This is purposeful by Democrats. They're totally fine weakening our country and endangering immigrants for their political games. And it's cynical and it's wrong, and we've got to do something about it.
Representative Chip Roy, I know we got to let you go, but people can follow you on Twitter at Rep Chip Roy, at Rep Chip Roy. Where else can they find you?
They can find me on my other Twitter at Chip Roy TX. They can find me at roy.house.gov or chiproy.com. Glad to be on. You keep up the fight. This country, I think the veil is being lifted on what's been happening to our schools, critical race theory, what's happening at our border. American people want their country back, and it's time for an American revival, and we're going to get after it.
Thank you very much. Representative Chip Roy, thank you so much for being with us. I know you got to move on to get to some other things. I want to talk a little bit about sort of the elitist hypocrisy that is accompanying some of this stuff that Chip Roy was just talking about. We talked a little bit about Muriel Bowser, who is the mayor of Washington, D.C., who reimposed the mask mandate on public gatherings. The night before it went into effect, she had a party for her 46th birthday, so happy birthday, Mayor Bowser. But she timed it so that the mandate went into effect a few hours after her party was over. And then the next night, she officiated at a wedding where people were pictured walking around maskless, indoors, mixing in a social situation, the very type of thing that she is imposing mask mandates on. This is the reason why people are having problems with elites telling them what to do, is that the elites tell everybody else what to do. This is Gavin Newsom at French Laundry all over again. And now Axios reports this morning that Barack Obama is going to have a 60th birthday bash at his 30-acre estate, his new 30-acre estate. And I don't begrudge him a 30-acre estate. He made a lot of money on his books, and he can spend it any way he likes, and he can have a party any way he likes. This is going to be an outdoor party, but 475 guests are going to be there, and they're insisting that they're going to follow COVID protocols. Now, I don't think that they need to be masked if they're outdoors. I don't think that they particularly need to be masked if they're indoors, as long as they're all vaccinated. They're going to encourage all the guests who are invited to be vaccinated. But it will be very interesting to see how much focus is put on this birthday party by the same media that is pushing this sort of relentless, oh my gosh, the Delta variant, it's the war has changed, it's a risk to everybody. Everybody's got to mask up. It'll be very interesting to see how they cover this Barack Obama birthday bash that Axios describes. I mean, it sounds great. I'd love to have an invitation. I'm vaccinated, so I'd love to have an invitation to it. I won't get an invitation to it, but I'd love to get an invitation to it. This is on Martha's Vineyard. It will be on... it will be, I believe, this coming up weekend. And so this is not too far from Provincetown, by the way, where this outbreak that changed the war took place. And Dwayne.
Martha's Vineyard?
Martha's Vineyard.
You mean it's not going to be held in the Capitol steps with the squad in solidarity?
No. I mean, that's a whole other thing, too, right? The squad is camping out in the Capitol steps. Meanwhile, Barack Obama is going to have 475 of his closest friends celebrating his 60th birthday.
In Martha's Vineyard, you say?
In Martha's Vineyard, yes. And it says Martha's Vineyard does not qualify as an area of substantially high risk, which was the target of CDC recommendations. You want to know why? Because people have 30-acre estates.
That's kind of a swanky place.
It is a swanky place. And again, I don't begrudge anybody. If you've got the money to buy for 30 acres on Martha's Vineyard, God bless you. You should go out and do it if that's what's going to make you happy. That's free enterprise and that's free choice. I'm glad that he's celebrating his 60th birthday. I'm just waiting to see how the media is going to celebrate that. Coming up next, Larry Elder checks in. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Hugh. We'll be right back.
Thank you, Ed Morrissey. I'm not there today, of course, but I want to keep reminding people about the amazing sponsors. I'm lying on a beach. That's where I am. And Ed is filling in for me so ably, and I appreciate that. I hope he's not pummeling you with Steelers talk. Poor old Big Ben showed up looking puffy. But he got his house. He doesn't have to worry. He's just going to mail it in for a year. But if you need a house, if you want to buy a house, say you moved from Minnesota to, say, Texas, and you had to buy a house, call Andrew and Todd first. Andrew Del Rey, Todd Avakian are great sponsors of the program. AndrewandTodd.com with Sierra Pacific. They lend money. Get pre-qualified. You call them at 888-888-1172. Find out how much you can afford. Have them help you fix your credit report so you can afford more. House prices are on the rise. That means you're going to need more eligibility. And the way to do that, of course, call Ed. Don't call Ed. Call AndrewandTodd.com. Head to their website at AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172. And don't forget, ReliefFactor.com. Now, if you're watching, I've got it right here. I took it in the first part of the day as soon as I got up on vacation. I take it with me on vacation. The Fetching Mrs. Hewitt has it packed away. Don't leave home without it, and certainly don't go to work this morning. Maybe you have a Texas commute like Ed does, stretching vast in front of you. Endless plains stretching, rolling out with oil wells and tumbleweeds. ReliefFactor.com. Maybe you're in wintry Minnesota and you're listening. It's winter there already. That's why Ed left. Get your ReliefFactor.com. If you're on the beaches of California or sweltering in D.C., take your ReliefFactor.com. Don't forget it. Don't leave home without it. I take it in the first hour. Remind you about it hour two and three. Whether you're working out more, getting into shape, or whether you are just getting a little bit older and a little bit more pain because your joints hurt, ReliefFactor.com. Please don't forget it. Go there, $19.95. Get you started, ReliefFactor.com. Come right back for more of Ed Morrissey on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Welcome back. This is Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com filling in for Hugh today and welcoming our great friend Larry Elder to the show to give us a check-in on the California recall effort and his gubernatorial run. Larry, great to talk to you today.
Ed, you too. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So what is going on in the campaign here? I mean, you've really shaken things up here. You've I think, re-energized the whole recall effort by jumping into this. And I'm thrilled for your for the energy that you're bringing into this. How are you seeing things out there in the campaign trail?
Well, so far, so good. The polls show that I'm substantially ahead of my Republican rivals, but that really isn't the issue. The issue is the first part of the ballot. It's very simple. Do you want this man, Gavin Newsom, recalled? If 50% plus one voter does so, the second question is, whom do you want to replace him? Now, unless 50% plus one says they want to recall Gavin Newsom, it doesn't matter how well the Republicans do. And that's why I'm urging all of my Republican rivals to keep your eye on the prize. And the prize is Gavin Newsom. The prize is the 2.2 million Californians that signed the petition to get this guy out. At least a quarter of them, Ed, are independents and Democrats who just voted for him 2 years earlier. They are angry about the coronavirus mandates. They're not only angry about the mandates, they're angry about the hypocrisy. As you know, he sat up there at that French Laundry restaurant with the very people that drafted the mandates, violating the mandates, not wearing masks, not socially distancing. Meanwhile, his own two kids were enjoying in-person private education while he slammed down education for everybody else in the state. Now, the educational system is already pretty bad, especially for urban students. 75% of black boys, believe it or not, in California cannot read at state levels of proficiency. And those levels ain't very high. Nearly half of third graders cannot read at state levels of proficiency, and they lost a whole year of in-school learning. 300,000 public school teachers, it is estimated by everybody I talk to that at least 5% of them are incompetent. That's 15,000 teachers who ought not be teaching. Now, if that were the LAPD, there's roughly 10,000 officers LAPD had. Let's assume 5% of them were bad. That's 500 officers that are planting evidence or engaging in excessive force or racially profiling. We wouldn't put up with it. But we're putting up with 15,000 bad teachers, many of whom end up in the inner city. They're not in the West Side. They're not in the Valley. They're in the inner city. That's why two-thirds of black parents, according to a recent report I read, do not want to send their kids back to the Los Angeles school district in the fall. They argue that the worst teachers end up in the schools that need them the most. And this is a teachers union. They are the largest funder of my opponent, Gavin Newsom. They adamantly oppose choice in school because they know that the teachers will not automatically be union members and they won't automatically get those dues. So I am an adamant proponent of choice in public school, and my opponent is opposed to it.
Now, Larry, this is the thing that frustrates me about this. The whole past year, right, is the fact that the CDC, which as compromised as the CDC has become, the CDC has been very clear that schools can reopen. And right. The teachers' unions are keeping a lock on this. And Republican response to this has been to go after the CDC, which is understandable. But I don't see the money going into the school choice effort to go out into the urban and first ring suburb communities that are the hardest impacted by this, and to build constituencies in there on the basis of school choice. This is a red carpet issue for Republicans right now. And for some reason, they're not picking up on this. I mean, I think that your focus on this is exactly right.
I couldn't agree more. It's right over the plate, waist high, fastball, straight down the plate, right where you want it. And again, 80% of the public school students here in California are black and brown. These are the ones that the left claims that they care about. And they're the ones that are getting the worst education. It's right. I've been giving a lot of interviews, including to black newspapers. There's one called the Sacramento Observer. When I came in, I can tell they weren't feeling me. I could just tell by the body language. This guy's a sellout. He's an Uncle Tom. He's a Republican. And I said, aren't you tired? Aren't you tired of the fact that my former high school, Crenshaw High School, that was the high school that was featured in the movie Boys in the Hood? Aren't you tired that only 2% of kids at my former high school, two-thirds are black, one-third roughly Hispanic, only 2% are math proficient, and yet you're mandated to go to that school, and you go in there and you pull the lever time and time and time again for the Democratic Party that is not giving you what you want? The polls show that black and brown urban parents want choice. It isn't even close. And here you are voting for Democrats that don't want to give it to you, and you're afraid to vote for Larry Elder because he has an R at the end of the name. Connect the dots. Rethink your assumptions. And I believe I'm going to peel off a lot of Democrat and independent support in this recall election.
All right, Larry, where can people find you and find out where they can participate in your campaign?
They can go to electelder.com, electelder.com, and I'm happy you brought that up because my opponent can raise and spend an unlimited amount of money. I have expenditure limitations, believe it or not. And just the other day, the California Teachers Association put in $1.8 million on the anti-recall side. About a week ago, one of the larger unions, the SEIU Union, Service Employee International Union, put in $5 million. It is estimated that he's going to spend at least $50 million, maybe even $75 million to stop me. So unless I get people from California and outside of California to help me, I can't defeat this guy. Now, why should somebody from outside California care? Well, how many times do you hear people say people leave California and they, quote, bring their politics with them? That's because, Ed, they haven't connected the dots. There's a reason why housing prices are so high. It's because of the environmental extremists that have a stranglehold on Sacramento, two-thirds of the lower chamber Democrats, two-thirds of the upper chamber Democrats, and they hate growth. And the California Environmental Quality Act, called CEQA, allows virtually anybody to stop any project for any reason. And that is why the price of a home in California is 150% more than the price of a home outside of California.
We're going to have to wrap that up. Electelder.com is where you need to go. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for you. Have a great day, folks.